Welcome to Journey the Monkey King with myself, Kriva, and my friend MJ.
Yo!
We're back to the plot now, having taken a break for a chat with the Journey to the West podcast last time. And we're on to chapter 42.
Yay! Also, the guys were lovely. Their podcast is great and you should listen to them.
Yeah. Also, insert Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy joke here.
I'm actually wearing a t-shirt with a picture of Marvin the Paranoid Android on it.
Nice.
Done in the style of that Barack Obama poster that says, "No hope, this will all end in tears."
Oh yeah, I've seen that one before. It's the spherical version of Marvin from the film, right?
Yeah, objectively the worst version of Marvin, because they iPodized him. It was supposed to be, because Douglas Adams has this, was a Big Apple fanboy. And it was supposed to be this
one. We all have our sins. We all have our sins.
And this was before Apple became what it is. Marvin is supposed to be pieced together from scrap. He's got to paint it in the diode all down his left side. He's, you know, this is...
Sleekness doesn't suit him.
No, but it is the most recognizable image of Marvin the Paranoid Android, and it was a gift from a friend, and I love it very much. So,
in fairness, he didn't look great in the TV show either.
I've never seen the TV show, but I really should. I've read the books.
I'm not very fond of it, to be honest.
No.
I think it's very slow. It's very plodding.
I mean, like Adam's use of language is the best selling point of those books. To be honest, it was like. Arthur grappled for his consciousness like a man reaching for a bar of soap in the bath. The thunder rumbled across the hill like a man saying "and another thing" hours after he's lost the argument. I mean, it's just like, oh, chef's kiss, and you can't really get that on screen.
Yeah, you do occasionally get, like, they do occasionally just do cuts with, like, little animated segments from the guide, and that's about the closest you get, but you don't get any of the narration or anything like that.
So tune in about 56 weeks or 54 weeks for our next podcast where I just found...
No, double about... that, because we're only putting out an episode every 2 weeks.
Okay, wow. 2 more years. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so coming soon in 2023.
Oh... Journey of the depressed Englishman.
Journey of the dressing gown. Journey of the towel.
Journey of the towel. There we go.
Yeah. Know where your towel is. Anyway, we're talking about a different book.
Yeah. And so for warnings here, we're gonna keep having mentions of cannibalism. That's just constantly.
I mean, it goes without saying these days, doesn't it?
But in particular, This chapter we're gonna see a fine return of magical torture devices and some impaling.
Yay! Oh, do love a good bit of impaling. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you will recall, at the end of the last chapter, Red Boy sent out his six top-ranking men: Cloud and Fog, Fog and Cloud, Quick as Fire, Swift as Wind, Hurly Burly and Burly Hurly, to invite someone that he called the Venerable Old King to come over and eat the Tong Monk.
Venerable Old King.
Yes. So Wukong assumes that the Venerable Old King must be Red Boy's father, his old friend, the Bull Demon King.
I feel like even if that is the case, something has happened off screen to, or off page, to make this person pissed off with Wukong.
It's pretty reasonable to just assume any given character will be pissed off at Wukong if they know who he is.
Yeah.
But despite not having seen him in like 600 years, Wukong still remembers exactly what his old mate looks like. And he ducks ahead of the party and shapeshifts into the Bull Demon King, and pulls out some of his hairs and transforms them into little pretend minions for himself. And he pretends to be out on a hunting party.
Okay.
So the six lads run into him and they're surprised to meet him on the way. But they explain that they've been sent by the great king, Holy Child, to invite the bull demon king back to the fiery cloud cave to eat the flesh of the Tang monk.
Yay!
So he agrees and he heads back with them, where Red Boy prepares a grand welcome for his father with unfurled flags and beating drums lining the entrance to the cave.
Yeah, you gotta clean up when the parents come back.
Yeah. Red Boy kowtows to his father. And Wukong tells him that there's no need to stand in ceremony. We're family, but Red Boy ignores him and just continues to bow for a while until he's paid his full respects.
There are some upsetting parental relationships in this novel.
I don't think this is meant to be a sign of particular disciplinarian tendencies here. I think it's just this is like the proper formal. This is the proper formal like respect that is like genuinely assumed.
This is true.
This is Red Boy like being polite, not Red Boy being like,
oh shit,
not being particularly like afraid to piss off his father or anything. So after Red Boy talks about the plan for the feast, and they're going to eat this monk, he's come from China, etc. Wukong, disguised as the Bull Demon King, asks, wait, are you talking about the Tang monk that's Pilgrim Sun's master? And everybody, yeah, that's him. And Wukong goes, oh, you shouldn't mess with him. Oh, he's extremely powerful. You know, once the Jade Emperor sent 100,000 celestial soldiers after him, and they couldn't even catch him using cosmic nets. You should let his master go immediately. If he finds out you've killed his master, he won't even have to fight his way in here. He could just drill a hole into the mountain with his golden hoop rod and shovel it right out of its roots. And if he kills you, then who's going to take care of me in my old age?
Pretty good point.
Red Boy's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? I already fought him and kicked his ass. They asked the four Dragon Kings to come help them to put out my fire, and they did sweet fuck all. And after capturing Zhu Baji already, and when Sun Wukong came back for him, he ran away the second I tried to grab him again. And Wukong says, you know, you might have overpowered him with your fire, but do you know that he knows 72 different types of transformations? Well, he can change into whatever he wants. I'll still recognize him. It's fine. And Wukong is like, oh, you know, he could even change into something tiny like a fly or another insect and sneak in that way. He could even change into me. How could you possibly recognize him?
he likes the troll too much.
Yeah. Red Boy doesn't take the feigned gloating. He doesn't notice it. And the little joke that Wukong is having with himself. And he just says, don't worry, he won't dare come approach my door again. So Wukong decides to try a different tactic. Rather than trying to get him afraid of Wukong, he tells him, you sound like you have it all sorted out, but I'm afraid I can't eat the Tang monk today. I'm starting to feel my age a bit, and your mother often tells me I should be doing some good deeds, and I've decided to take up a vegetarian diet 4 days a month.
Well, guess what? He's a vegetarian. This works out.
I don't think vegetarianism allows you to eat other vegetarians.
Well, I have been doing it all wrong.
And he says he can't eat meat again until tomorrow because he's on an off meat day. And Red Boy just thinks this makes absolutely no goddamn sense. His father has been eating people for over 1,000 years. And he excuses himself for a minute and he goes back to his six commanders and he asks them, where exactly did they meet his dad? And they said, oh, we ran into him on the way. He was like on a hunting party. Like, okay, so you you didn't reach his house. No, no, he didn't. Fuck. That's not him. And they're kind of incredulous. They're like, you didn't even recognize your own father? He's like, well, it looks like him. It looks exactly like him, but he doesn't talk like him. And he tells them to get armed and get ready to attack if he calls for help. So he goes back to Wukong and decides to test him to make sure that it isn't his father. And he tells him that a few days ago, he was taking a holiday and he ran into Master Zhang Daoling. Master Zhang asked him about the hour, date, month, and year of his birth so that he could tell Red Boy's fortune. But he was too young at the time to remember exactly when he was born.
I love that.
So could you remind me the exact time I was born so that I can tell him the next time I run into him?
To be honest, my parents wouldn't have that information on hand.
I don't know what mine either. Wukong keeps a poker face and he says he's getting old and he really can't remember off the top of his head. I'll ask your mom when I go home. And then Red Boy knows for sure that this is not the bull demon king in front of him. His dad never fucking shuts up about his birth charts.
Okay, that makes sense.
His dad really into astrology. So he immediately attacks Wukong, shouting for everyone to rush in with him. Wukong doesn't miss a beat. He manages to parry him with the iron rod, turns back into his true form, and taunts Red Boy, shouting at him, "Oh, how could you attack your own father?" This embarrasses Red Boy enough that he kind of stops for a second. And Wukong uses the moment to turn into a beam of golden light and flee. Red Boy, again, I think just kind of embarrassed at this point, just lets him go and just tells his men to just shut the door. He's willing to just call it a loss and go eat Tripitaka. So Wukong is in a good mood now, and he returns to Xiao Wujing laughing to himself. And he tells Wujing about what happened, and he's particularly pleased, especially about having gotten Red Boy to bow to him.
Never mind the mortal danger that this person is still in. I won. I looked great, and that is all that matters.
Oh yeah, Wujing immediately points that out. He's like, "You are going to get our boss killed. If you care more about point scoring than about saving him." Wukong says not to worry. He'll go himself now and ask Guan Yin for help like they originally planned. He's feeling a lot better now after having tricked Red Boy. Laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just need the release.
Yeah. Wujing tells him to hurry. He again kind of says, you know, you've given Red Boy reason to have a grudge against you. He might take it out in Tripitaka, so hurry the fuck up. Wukong flies off the pod like a mountain and he's announced to Guan Yin. And Wukong straightens out his clothes and prostrates himself before Guan Yin before explaining the latest shit they've gotten themselves into. When he mentions the Dragon Kings, she asks why he didn't just come to her in the first place.
Because you're scary and we didn't want to bother you.
Yeah. But he does say they did send Zhu Bi after her after that, but Red Boy tricked him by turning into her form. And that pisses her off.
Ooh, yeah.
She kind of, in her anger, she kind of tosses the magic face that she carries into the ocean. And this worries Wukong. He hasn't seen her like that worked up before. And he also feels slightly bad about having caused her to break her vase, but as he thinks that, a tortoise rises out of the ocean carrying it on his back. The tortoise nods its head 24 times to Guanyin as a way of bowing, because it can't really bow because it's a tortoise.
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be funnier if it just like flipped itself over.
Guanyin tells Wukong to pick it up and bring it back to her, but he can't carry it. It won't budge an inch.
It's the tortoise's vase now.
Guanyin calls him monkey head, which is a cute little insult, and says, how can he capture monsters if he can't even pick up a vase? And Wukong says that, oh, he's been injured, but Wukong actually, or sorry, but Wukong says that he's been injured, but Guanyin actually explains what's actually happened is because the vase fell into the water, it's picked up like an entire ocean's worth of water inside it.
Oh, don't you hate when that happens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she picks it up with one hand and carries it on her left palm. And she says that the water in the vase should be enough to put out Red Boy's fire. But seeing as Wukong can't carry it, she'll have to send one of her attendants, the dragon girl skilled in wealth, with him to carry it. But she's worried that he'll try and steal it. And she asks him to leave something behind as collateral. And Wukong asks, you know, what can he leave behind? He's taken a vow of poverty. He doesn't have worldly possessions. All he has is the silk shirt, which was a gift from you in the first place. A tiger skin skirt can't be worth anything. I need the iron rod for my own protection. You know, the only other thing I have made of gold is this band on my head. You know, maybe if you took that off, I could leave it with you.
It's the iron rod. Wukong is being emasculated by a finance girl boss and a terrifying, terrifying trans goddess.
at this little, like, little smarmy little attempt to get the band off, she just calls him smug and tells him what she wants him to leave behind is one of the three magic life-saving hairs that she gave him previously. So he hasn't used these yet, I believe, but she gave him like three magic hairs that he has stuck to his back.
I recall, but I'm also really confused at this point about Wukong's immortality status.
I don't know. I think he could be killed by like sufficiently powerful magic.
Fair.
But he's not gonna die of old age.
Magic loophole.
Ignore that one time where he did die of old age, but you know, he's...
Yeah, well, I mean, he sorted that out with the boss and spoke to the manager.
Yeah, and then became immortal a couple other ways afterwards.
Yeah, he's supposed to be like quadruple immortal right now, yeah. Is what I'm trying to...
Yeah, and
parse out.
He's you know, relatively indestructible, I think. I think it is possible still for him to be killed by something powerful enough.
Fair enough.
Anyway, and Guanyin gives out to him in a way that is just involves a really complicated pun.
Was there did Anthony Yu give up here as well?
He just like just explains it in a footnote. Like it's untranslatable.
Okay.
We
appreciate you anyway, Mr. Yu.
Like there's a paragraph footnote explaining it that's like 100 words long, I just checked, which isn't a terribly long paragraph, but you know, just
it's like, a lot to explain a pun.
Yeah, and it's not going to be funny if I explain it, so let's just move on. So Wukong appeals to her to think of Tripitaka, and she decides just to go with Wukong herself. And she tells Wukong to lead the way, but he's worried that if he flies in front of her, his skirt will fly up and he'll end up offending her by accident.
Ooh.
So Guanyin tells the dragon girl skilled in wealth to pick a petal of a lotus flower from her pond and drop it into the ocean. And she tells Wukong to get on the petal and she'll send him across the ocean on it.
Or you could just put on underwear. How about that?
Guanyin blows him across the ocean, and then she gets Moksha and orders him to go to heaven and borrow the swords of constellations from his father. And Guanyin uses a spell to turn them into a thousand-leaf lotus platform, which she mounts and travels on instead of using her own normal lotus platform, which is like the normal, like if you look at a depiction of her like sitting, she's on this kind of like lotus throne thing.
So she's basically borrowed a van.
And Wukong makes fun of her for borrowing someone else's things instead of using her own one, and she tells him to shut up.
Yeah, fair. Just don't entertain the bastard. It's the only way you can deal with him.
So once they arrive, Guanyin summons all of the local deities and orders them to evacuate every living thing within 300 miles.
Oh wow. This is nuclear.
Once they've done that, she turns over her vase, pouring out an entire ocean over the mountain.
This does seem a little bit like overkill, I'm not gonna lie. This is scorched earth, Guanyin. Or soggy earth, I guess, but.
She was not happy about someone impersonating her.
Yeah, I get that.
Wukong does think to himself that he never would have thought of evacuating everything before this. Guanyin is very merciful to even save like small animals and insects and everything. And she tells Wukong to put out his hand, and she dips a willow branch in her vase and writes the word delusion on his left palm with it. This isn't for making fun of Wukong.
Oh, okay.
This is something else. So she tells him to go pick a fight with Red Boy, but to throw the fight intentionally and retreat back to her. So Wukong goes, bangs on the door, and he taunts Red Boy. But Red Boy refuses to be baited until Wukong eventually just gets fed up and smashes a hole in the door. And Red Boy, you know, this annoys him enough to attack him like he's broken into his house. He starts fighting him. And Wukong shouts back that well, you should be punished for throwing your father out on the street. And they fight for a while, and as planned, Wukong throws the fight and runs away. And again, Red Boy just leaves him go and is like, this isn't worth the hassle. I'm just gonna go eat that monk now.
He's hungry, you know. You gotta eat.
And Wukong keeps taunting him. He manages to get under Red Boy's skin enough to kind of get him into a fight and running away again. And eventually Red Boy just asks him, why do you just keep running? You were able to fight much longer before, and you're just giving up straight away. And Wukong says, I'm afraid that you're going to use your Samadhi fire again. And Red Boy promises not to use the fire. Let's just have a good fight. I won't burn you, I promise. And Wukong tells him, okay, come over here so we don't have to fight in front of your house. And Wukong has been holding his fist shut with the word delusion written on it. And when he opens it now, and it kind of casts a spell on Red Boy to kind of make him very easily fall for the trick. And he follows Wukong all the way back to where Guanyin is waiting in ambush. And Wukong disappears and hides behind Guanyin. What it literally says is, with one shake of his body, slipped into the divine luminosity that surrounded the body of the Bodhisattva and disappeared. So take from that description what you will of he's kind of, I guess, hiding in her aura almost.
Okay.
So Red Boy goes up to her and asks if she's Wukong's reinforcements. And Guan Yu just ignores him, and he asks again, and she continues to ignore him until he gets pissed off and stabs at her with his lance. And all she does is change into a beam of golden light and flies into the air. And Wukong follows her and asks her what she's doing. And she tells him to shut up and just watch. So Red Boy starts laughing to himself and mocking Wukong and Guan Yin out loud. He calls her some namby-pamby bodhisattva, and he decides to take her lotus platform as a prize.
This has never worked well for anybody.
Yeah, so he sits down on the platform, and he imitates the usual kind of bodhisattva posture with his hands and legs folded in prayer. You know what, like all the Buddha statues look like. And Wukong starts commenting that her seat has been stolen, and she tells him again, shut up.
Shut up.
This is the plan. And she points her willow twig down and shouts, withdraw. And suddenly the platform transforms back into all the swords that it originally was. That Moxa borrowed from his father, and she orders Moxa to use his cudgel to strike the sword handles and impale Red Boy with all of the swords. Red Boy drops his weapon and starts trying to pull like all of these God knows how many swords out of his body, but Guan Yin uses another spell that turns them into hooks, so that he can't pull them out.
Oh, that is nasty.
Yep. And at this point, Red Boy pleads for mercy, and he promises that in exchange for letting him go, he'll convert to Buddhism and he'll never practice violence again.
Gonna need some insurance on that one.
So Guan Yin, at first anyway, accepts this. She takes out a golden razor and shaves off most of his hair, and she leaves three tufts that are each knotted into a small braid. Wukong makes fun of what he looks like. He kind of makes fun of him for looking androgynous, which is just, that's piss off, Wukong. Guan Yin, like what she did with Wu Jing and Wu Neng, gives him a new name for his conversion, Boy Skilled in Wealth, or the Sanskrit name is Sudana Kumara. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. I apologize for everything I pronounce on this podcast. Which is again, this is kind of a just so story. So he's a Buddhist figure who is kind of in certain traditions of certain stories tied to Guan Yin and depicted as one of her two attendants. The dragon girl mentioned earlier being the other one.
Okay, interesting.
So this is kind of a just so story for him. I suppose maybe just so story isn't the right term.
Origin story.
An origin, yeah, origin story. He was kind of a more modern idea, I guess. Or more modern terminology, at least. So Guan Yin shouts, withdraw, and the swords remove themselves from the boy's body, leaving behind no marks or scars at all. And Guan Yin tells Moksha to take the swords back to his father and head back to the Potlaka Mountain, and she'll meet him back home. And when Red Boy realizes he isn't actually harmed at all, and the swords have been taken away, he starts to think it was all a trick and he wasn't really harmed, and Guan Yin doesn't have any real power. He picks up his lance and tries to attack her. And Wukong jumps in to try and defend her, but it's completely needless. Do you remember how Buddha gave her three golden fillets? So Wukong has one. The Black Wind King has the second one. And she throws the last one at Red Boy, which splits into five and attached to his head, his hands, and his feet. So the Wukong has the constrictive fillet, the Black Wind King has the prohibitive fillet, and Red Boy has just gotten the golden fillet. And she recites the golden fillet spell, which is, you know, it's the same as the spell that hurts Wukong, except it only hurts Red Boy's one.
Okay, good. Because if she'd used the same for both, that could have gotten really...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Red Boy curls up into a ball in pain, and he is finally subdued.
You do not fuck with this yeah. goddess. You just...
And that's chapter 42.
I mean, possibly one of the reasons Wukong did not go direct to Guanyin is this could have happened to his friend's kid. Like, I don't usually assign any sort of good moral motivation to his actions, but I'm just gonna throw an ocean at you and impale you a million times.
Yeah, she doesn't fuck around.
She does not fuck around.
She's called efficacious for a reason.
She gets shit done. Yay.
So how do you feel about Red Boy?
I mean, you gotta feel sorry for anyone who's got that thing around their head.
Yeah, that's true.
Otherwise, don't mess with Guanyin. Just don't.
A new rule we've learned, don't impersonate her.
No, absolutely do not. No, that cannot end well. Sorry, did you say this was 42?
Yeah.
I thought it was 46. I think I said something earlier that it was 46, but that would include all the bonus content, I imagine.
It might be 46 if you like look at the podcast feed and count up all the episodes. I'm not sure. I haven't paused the count, but yeah, we did a few extra episodes that aren't like chapter episodes, so it could be at this point.
Could be. Also we have bonus Patreon content. That's yes. The thing that we have. Yes.
We're planning on doing a second episode of that, which is going to be a reading through bits of the travelogue that the real Tripitaka, the real Xuanzang?
I think it's Xuanzang.
Wrote after he returned to China from his own pilgrimage to India.
So yay.
There's a lot of interesting folk stories that he shares. And gruesome violence. So you can look forward to that. Also, yeah. I want to show you something there. I've already gone mad with the Patreon money. I commissioned an artist to draw Red Boy.
That is very cool.
So this is going to be the cover art for the episode. Actually, I'm kind of lying. I actually did this before we set the Patreon up because I wanted to. I like this guy's art.
Who's the artist?
Alexis Shi. He's like a Finnish Chinese artist. I'll link to his website and stuff in the show notes. He's Saracenian on Twitter. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. There'll be a link. And he does a lot of stuff kind of based off historical Chinese, like actual clothes and art and architecture.
Awesome. Amazing.
Should we steal the other guy's sign off? Should we say journey on, or should we come up with our own like decent sign off instead
on of way. Journey instead... on Garth. No, it's a great sign off. I don't know. But like we've been told that our inability to finish these things is charming. So just social media deep in show notes. Don't piss off Guanyin. Have a great day.
Have a great day. Thank you for listening.